If I bleed tonight, if I am sad tonight, I don't have a job to find. And if I work tonight, if I'm so tired tonight, I'll fall asleep when I'm home, when I'm home. Hey everybody, and welcome to a brand new episode of the Power Slam Podcast, the first episode of the Power Slam Podcast of 2019. We have big plans this year, so whether you want that t-shirt that you've wanted for years with the Power Slam logo on it, or whether you want to see more of our face when we do this, we have big plans for 2019, ladies and gentlemen. But these plans would not be possible without the patriarch of the Power Slam, Finlay Martin. Hi Finn, how are you, and a happy new year to you.
I'm wonderful, Kenny, and happy new year to you. I think the big question people want to know, Kenny, is how much weight did you put on over Christmas?
I put on 1.8 kilograms over Christmas and New Year. So right. About what I expected to do. So I need to get back on the fitness. So I will endeavor to do that this week. Maybe next week. Soon.
Good work.
Did you pile on the pounds watching
exactly
all the wrestling?
Exactly the same way as when I started, 13 stone. That's my optimum weight, and that's what I am.
There you go. You're at 13 stone, which for our listeners across the pond, 13 stone in pounds is 182 pounds.
That's not bad. I'm happy with that weight.
Yeah, you weigh less than Daniel Bryan. So, it's first podcast 2019. A ton of stuff to talk about, because on New Year's Day, I think it was actually the stroke of midnight, on New Year's morning or end of New Year's Eve, the Elite announced what we have long since discussed, whether it's your interview with Cody or me on the tour with Cody. All Elite Wrestling, which has now been announced as a promotion. Tony Khan, Jacksonville Jaguars. It wasn't all coincidence. It was for a reason. They've announced the name of an all-in two show called Double or Nothing. We don't know any more information yet. We are going to find out.
I think based on that name, we can kind of predict. I think we can kind of work out which city it might be held in.
I mean, I've long but said that Des Moines, Iowa should get a big show.
Oh, you've spoilt it now, Kenny.
But yes, you are right. Las Vegas, Nevada, home of WrestleMania 9, which I was just reading about in the Pro Wrestling Through the Power Slam Years book that I have, my 612-page Bible, where Finn all but tells me in written form that like WrestleMania 9 was like the worst show he'd ever seen.
You are the only person on earth with a hard copy of that book, so I'm glad you've got up to WrestleMania 9, and I seem to remember trashing it pretty hard in the book, and rightly so.
I thought you were going to say that I'm the only person on planet earth who likes WrestleMania 9.
Well, that could well be true as well. Now, I'm sure there are others.
But for me, WrestleMania 9 was, I was a kid, it's a nostalgia thing, right? Like, because when you were watching WrestleMania 9, you would have been, what, a teenager, like late teens, maybe just turned 20 or something? Something like that.
I would have been 23. Superstars of Wrestling had been going for just over a year by that point.
So there you go. So at that point, you know, WrestleMania 9 was going to be, I mean, there's no way that was going to be for you. You'd watched long enough and were old enough that you needed more than that.
Yeah, I think I've been watching American wrestling for about 5 years at that point. So I kind of knew enough to know that that was not a good show.
Whereas for a 9-year-old, it was very camp, it was very fun, but it is a terrible show. But I love how terrible it is. There's so much for us to talk about with AEW, the rally that's coming up this Tuesday in Jacksonville, which goes, you know, coincidentally whether you want to believe that or not, against SmackDown, which is going to be in Jacksonville. We have the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day Raw and SmackDown shows to talk about. But, of course, the big talking point of the last little while is Wrestle Kingdom 13.
Yes.
Which took place this past week, Friday morning. Yesterday morning, as we record this, at the Tokyo Dome in Japan. We ended up watching... We were going to watch like the top couple of matches, and then I think we both ended up watching the full main card in the end.
That's right, yeah, yeah.
So let's just go through it. I mean, overall, first of all, Wrestle Kingdom 13, where does it rank for you of the Wrestle Kingdoms you've watched before? Is it a thumbs-up show? Is it a thumbs-in-the-middle show? How good did you think it was overall?
I thought it was definitely a thumbs-up show, without a doubt. I mean, there have been better... installments of Wrestle Kingdom New Japan's flagship super show held each January 4th. I thought the 2016 version was better. And I think the 2015 version was really good as well. I actually enjoyed the 2014 version of the super show. I think my main complaint would be there was too many multi-man matches. That would be my main complaint. But that's almost really a credit to New Japan, because they've got enough talent now that who they feel are worthy of a spot on the card, that they book them in multi-man matches. If you look at guys like Minoru Suzuki and Mike Skrull and Hangman Page, they were on the pre-show. They didn't even make it onto the main show. So that just tells you how much talent New Japan has now that are over to a significant degree.
Yeah, I mean, you know, one of the things I thought about it was I enjoyed the show maybe more than I've enjoyed any Wrestle Kingdom before, and I think it's because the matches for me didn't outstay their welcome that much.
Yeah.
Whereas I've felt in the past that sometimes I'm like, does this really need to be 20 minutes? So I thought they paced it pretty well, which is funny because I've read a few people who watch New Japan more often who didn't like that matches were shorter. But I enjoyed that. But let's just kind of go through the card. We'll obviously spend more time on the top matches, but let's just kind of go through the card and what we thought of it. So, I didn't watch the Gauntlet match in the pre-show. Did you watch that?
Well, I attempted to, but I was just like, let's just get to the main show. Yeah, I watched part of it, and it was just the matches were very quick, and I just thought, I don't really need to see this. So, yeah, the first match I watched in its entirety was Kota Ibushi versus Will Ospreay.
So that was the opening match of the main card. Will Ospreay, Kota Ibushi was the never open weight champion, and Will Ospreay went on to defeat him. Do you have time codes here, or do you want me to use the time codes that are on Wikipedia? I know that you sometimes do time codes. I don't want to get it wrong.
Oh, no, you use the time codes. Okay. No, I didn't bother timing it.
These are the time codes on Wikipedia, so I guess pinch of salt. But you get the gist of it. Will Ospreay beat Kota Ibushi in 18 minutes and 13 seconds. In the end, Kota Ibushi ended up walking away with a concussion in the match. What did you think of the match? And where these performers are, I guess, as well, in New Japan?
I'm not really a fan of Will Ospreay. I'm not sure if I've said that before. I've watched a lot of his matches, and people keep telling me how amazing he is. I think he's a tumbler. That's what I think he is.
He's a what?
A tumbler.
What does that
mean? That's like probably an old time term for somebody who does lots of high spots.
Okay.
A tumbler, that's what he is to me. And this was just another one of his tumbling performances. And fans are really into him. People like him. So I realize he's over. I realize there is an audience for this type of wrestling. So that's my personal preference. And didn't really like the match. Didn't feel like a match to me. Loads of sequences of high spots, some of which made no sense at all. Didn't really think selling was that believable. Just to me, typical Will Ospreay performance. That's my opinion of Will Ospreay. I think Kota Ibushi is an amazing performer, and he really had a Will Ospreay match here. What did you think, Kenny?
Will Ospreay's style of wrestling, for the most part, is not really for me. And that's not that... I mean, I think he's very good. I've seen him do great stuff. But it's just like, I'm more of a kind of story wrestling fan than a purely athletic stuff. But like, my favourite match I've ever seen Will Ospreay have was when I was in, we were working at WCPW, and he had a match with Drew Galloway, and he worked a completely different kind of match.
To the ones
that he usually works. And I think that that shows that Will Ospreay actually has the talent to be that kind of wrestler. He tends to not really do that as much in Japan from what I've seen. And, you know, people love, you know, the series of matches that he had with Ricochet. And I'm never going to sit here and say that they are, you know, I mean, the athleticism those guys use is insane. I mean, it really is, you know, you marvel at it. But it doesn't work for me as much. So I enjoyed this fine, but I think that had this match have been where I maybe had more investment in the characters, I would have enjoyed it more. But for, you know, it was a good opener. I thought it was a good opener for the show.
I just think it would have been better if there was less, if there were fewer high spots and more wrestling, and each high spot would have meant more. I mean, yeah. At one point, Ibushi did a moonsault off the turnbuckles towards the ringside, towards the floor, and Ospreay intercepted it with a kick, but Ospreay wasn't at the place where Ibushi was moonsaulting. And it was just, what is this move? Why is Ibushi moonsaulting the ringside mats? So to me, that was just, I mean, that makes no sense.
My favorite spot of the match was where Ibushi had Ospreay in that kind of weird pile driver slam thing. Almost that kind of tombstone-esque spot. I thought it looked great, but it was a good opener to the show. I understand why they put them in that spot. I mean, the thing was, because these guys had done so much, and you know, it was going to be a hit with the people who enjoy those performers. Whatever followed that was going to have trouble.
Exactly, and that's another reason why don't do too much. Don't, and especially when your next match was a three-way tag match between junior heavyweights. Another reason.
Yeah, so it's
not
it's
to do so much.
And that led us into this three-way tag match for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Tag Titles. We had Bushi and Takagi against Kanemaru and El Desperado against Sho and Yo. Takagi and Bushi ended up getting the win. It went about 7 minutes. I found myself quite bored during this, kind of looking at my phone, and I don't think it was really the guy's fault, but I didn't really know what was going on. I didn't know who the people were, so I don't know if is that more me not really knowing the characters or not. So what did you think of this one? Just, I'm curious, because you know more about these people than I do.
Yeah, I think part of the problem was the match was too short. They needed more time to tell a story. I felt like it was more like a match than the previous match, which was, as you said, was 18 minutes. I mean, I enjoyed this. I was always a huge fan of Shingo when he was in Dragon Gate. He joined New Japan in October, I believe. He's there as a freelancer. I mean, he had some stunning matches in Dragon Gate. Just one of the most underrated performers of the last decade, in my opinion. He was frequently featured in the PS50, and rightly so, back in the day when PowerSlam was around. So, I mean, I enjoyed this match. To me, it felt more like a wrestling match than Ospreay versus Kota Ibushi did, but it was too short. I mean, they had to sprint through all the sequences here. So I would have liked to see this match maybe get 12 minutes, and Ospreay versus Kota Ibushi maybe getting 13 minutes. I think that would have been a better allocation of ring time.
Yeah, that makes sense. Up next, though, we had Zack Sabre Jr. with Taka Michinoku in the corner. What in the name of Jesus was going on with Taka Michinoku's hair? I mean, anyway, Zack Sabre Jr. taking on Tomohiro Ishii for the British Heavyweight Championship.
That's the Revolution Pro title, isn't it?
Yeah, it's a Rev Pro belt. These guys went about 11 and a half minutes. I really enjoyed this. I think somebody had mentioned it to me about a year ago, and I'd never really thought about it before, and I've not really watched a lot of Zack Sabre Jr. matches, but people had said, you know, look at the fact that he never really does anything high risk. He's very mat-based. He's very, like, you know, he works a completely different style to a lot of different wrestlers, and once I'd realised it, it's made me enjoy his matches a lot more. So I really liked this match. I thought it was pretty hard-hitting and pretty gripping to watch. Sabre Jr. ends up getting the win and winning the title. But yeah, this was my favourite match of the show so far. What did you think of this one?
Yeah, in full agreement. You know, great to see Andy Quilden from RevPro there. He presented Sabre Jr. with a brand new title belt afterwards, which was very nice. Looked like it cost a few quid. It was a huge improvement on the old one. I remember doing an interview with Andy for my third book, and he mentioned that New Japan was going to be featuring his British heavyweight title or RevPro titles on New Japan shows. And here we are on the biggest show that New Japan will promote this year, in one of the best matches on the show, I would say. It's certainly one of the top three matches on the show. Zach won the belt from Ishii. I can never pronounce that guy's surname. I think that's right. And
you got it right. Don't worry. Ishii's right.
Yeah, and it was just a tremendous boon for RevPro, I felt. And things like this, New Japan should be doing things like this because they've had a working relationship now with RevPro for years. So that's obviously still very tight. So good for them. Yeah, really enjoyed the match. Zack Sabre's a guy who's very slender, but once the match has been going for like 90 seconds to 2 minutes, you don't even notice because there's a fairly large weight difference between Zack and Tomohiro. I'm just going to refer to him by his first name and then I'll cock it up. But you just don't notice it because Zack's a guy, as the announcer said, I think it was Don Callis said, Zack Sabre's a guy who's all about angles and he does these joint manipulation and he uses his opponent's weight against him by doing actual wrestling holds, you know, which is something that you don't really see enough of in wrestling. And that's partly why it works so well for Zach, because he does something that not that many people do. And here it was sandwiched between junior heavyweight matches with guys flying all over the place. Zach's doing a completely different match. And that's another reason why it works so well, because it was very different from the two matches that preceded it. And fans were really into it. I mean, they were buying into all those submission attempts, certainly in the last half of the match. Really enjoyed the match. Good performance. Good work by both men. And yeah, Zack Sabre Jr. was a worthy and deserving winner, in my opinion.
Yeah, 100%. It's worth saying at this point that this was a third match, third title change of the show so far. It was followed by another title match, the IWGP Tag Team titles. It was Evil and Sanada against Tama Tonga and Tangaloa of the Bullet Club against the Young Bucks. I gotta say, this match didn't really click for me, and I really wanted it to, because I really like Tama Tonga as a kind of, you know, he's really trying to take the bull by the horns with the Bullet Club thing, and he's really trying to make it his own. I really like the Young Bucks. Sanada and Evil, I've seen bits and pieces of them through the years, which has been, I was kind of hoping for a lot more from this. It went 10 minutes, but ultimately, I think it was just really forgettable.
Yeah, I'm with you there, Kenny. Again, another match that was really too short. You were saying earlier about some people weren't happy with the timings on certain matches on this show. I totally agree. This was a match that just kind of just felt like filler. Just felt like, and again, we had another title change, right, Kenny?
Yeah, this was another title change with Evo and Sanada winning the belts.
And it's just like, by this point, I think we've had enough title changes, and that wasn't the last one of the night. So this is something New Japan has done far too often in the past, is changing sometimes most, and in some occasions, all of its titles on the Dome show. And
on this show, there were, hang on, let me count it, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, there were 8 title matches on this Wrestle Kingdom, and every single championship changed hands.
Yeah, I mean, at the end of it, there's only one that you remember. Well, maybe the top two you remember. Mm-hmm. But unless you're actually going through it match by match like we are now, when you go back and think of the match as the Super Show as a whole, you don't remember all these other title changes that kind of got lost. This match, yeah, it was just too short. Needed more time. Fans were into it at the end. I think we should note that.
They were into, I mean, the fans were into the characters here. And they were into the final couple of minutes. For me, I don't really think there was a lot of matches in these shows where I would have changed the times. I know what you're saying. For me, as a kind of non-New Japan viewer for the most part, there wasn't that many of them where I thought, oh, you know, if that match was longer, I'd have liked it more. I think this was maybe the one where if they had another 5 minutes and were able to, you know, take that last 2.5 minutes that were quite hot and turn it into like a last 7 minutes that were hot, maybe I would have remembered it a lot more. So this is the one that I would have probably given more time to.
Yeah, definitely when you've got three teams in there, because it means they've got very limited amount of time to really, I mean, I know that these acts are over anyway, but the idea is that you have people watching this show who have never watched New Japan before or infrequently watch it. And by watching the matches on this show, then they become fans and supporters of a particular character and buy their merchandise and et cetera, et cetera. So I think these guys, again, were sort of short-changed on time, and I think really needed you know, at least two or three more minutes to really show what they could do to really shine and sparkle and show us the very best of them. I don't think they did that here.
Up next, we get the IWGP United States Championship match. A man who we are very well versed with, Cody, who you spoke to in your interview and I did the tours with. Cody with Brandy in the corner. Brandy Rhodes defends against Juice Robinson, and Juice Robinson lifts the IWGP United States title in about 9 minutes. What did you make of the match and the outcome?
Yeah, I enjoyed this match. I know some people felt that this was the worst match on the card. I enjoyed this. I thought Juice Robinson is a guy who obviously used to be in the WWE system in NXT. Somebody who took a chance, went over to New Japan because I think he realized he was never going to make it in WWE. And I think that was the right call for him to go to New Japan. I thought he looked good here. There've been many times in the past where he's been in over his head, but I don't think he was here at all. I thought this was really good performance from Juice. I didn't really like Brandy Rhodes' involvement in the match, and I was very pleased when she was removed by the referee. Cody lost after he was hit with two pulp frictions, which is Juice Robinson's finisher. Robinson was new champion. Maybe it would have been better if it was longer, but people were saying, well, Cody hasn't really recovered from the knee injury yet. Maybe it was, you know, prudent for New Japan to keep this one a little shorter. I thought what they did was more than adequate. I enjoyed it. What did you think, Kenny?
Yeah, I thought this was like short and to the point in a good way. I think the one thing I disagree with you, I liked the Brandy Rhodes interference because it led to the ejection. And I thought that added to it, you know, because she is someone who, if you watch a load of Cody's matches in ROH and different places, she has been a big help to him in matches. You know, she will assist whenever she can. So I like the idea of her getting involved and sort of going after Juice, and that leads her to being ejected. So then it is one-on-one. He's going to hang with Juice on his own. Kind of echo what you said. I mean, Juice Robinson's a guy who was in WWE, and he could have had a kind of Heath Slater-esque role for years. And he decided he didn't want that, and he went away, and he took, you know, people talk about Cody or Drew taking a risk. CJ Parker / Juice Robinson, I think he took a bigger risk than anybody, because he was nobody before.
Yeah, I agree.
And, you know, everybody else could always be that guy on a poster saying former WWE superstar and make enough money to get by. He couldn't, so he really bet on himself, and I think this was an example of why he did the right thing. Cody, you know, Cody's a guy who put Juice Robinson over so decisively and let him look so good that, to me, that kind of tells you everything about Cody as a performer. Like, he's not, you know, there's a lot of people that if they were in his position and they were kind of, you know, EVP of a new company and had all this stuff happening, they would let all go to their head and not in any way let themselves look weak in any way. But Cody recognises what's good for wrestling, and recognise that what was good on this was for him to be decisively beaten by Juice, because you never know, they could come back and meet again down the line. And now there's a reason that Cody would need to try and have some revenge against them. So I liked it.
Yeah, definitely. And Robinson's a guy who I think really did gain a lot from this victory. So, I mean, I believe that Cody and the books and the rest of them will continue working for New Japan. But if this was Cody's last match for New Japan, at least for a while, then he did business on the way out. He was a total pro on the way out. He did the right thing on the way out, so good on him.
We had Taiji Ishimori against Kushida for the IWGP Junior Heavyweight Championship. They went about 11 minutes, and Ishimori lifted the title. Now, again, this kind of reminds me of earlier on. I wasn't hugely into this match, and I don't know whether it's because I don't really know the performers. Because, like, there's like maybe five or six names in New Japan who I know and I've seen a few of their matches, like Naito and Tanahashi, but I don't really recall seeing Kushida and Ishimori. I mean, Kushida kind of looks familiar. Maybe I've seen him once or twice, but he doesn't stick out in my mind. I just felt this didn't keep my attention as much as I'd hoped that it would. So it didn't really click for me. But you know a lot more about New Japan, about these performers. So talk us through, how did they do as a match, and was the outcome the right call?
I mean, I think it was, because the idea is they're trying to build Ishimori. I don't think he's ever been a particularly dynamic performer. I mean, they were really pushing his superior strength. That was the story of the match there. I mean, he looks great. You know, he's got a good look. He's a good-looking guy. Great physique on him. I mean, he's a good performer. I don't find him very charismatic. Don't think he really projects any great personality. He did quite a few matches for Impact Wrestling last year, and he was always at least satisfactory in the ring. You couldn't really criticize his in-ring performance for being substandard. But he didn't do anything, you know, he didn't do anything that particularly moved you. And that would be my evaluation of this match, where he didn't really shine here, even though he won the match and left as the champ. Kushida's a guy who's been around for a while. They did the Back to the Future entrance again. He used to be in a tag team called the Time Splitters. So they had like quite a...
The entrance was cool.
Yeah, the entrance there with him... it was like a kid came out, and then the guy came out pretending to be Doc Brown, and then all the dry ice went up, and then Kushida came out. So I mean, it was all right. I didn't think it was... I would have liked this match to be better than it was. I think this was another match that kind of got lost. I put this in the same category as the six man, the Tamatanga, Evil Tanada, Jackson's match. I'd put it in the same category as that, as a match that wasn't really that memorable when the show ended. Kind of seemed like something that was there to fill up time. Should have been better, really, Kenny.
So we're up to the top three matches. It's Jay White against Kazuchika Okada. No title on the line, a grudge match, and Jay White gets the win in just under 15 minutes, defeating Okada. And, you know, what kind of struck me here, again, as an outsider, is that, you know, this is on their biggest show of the year, they did what WWE never does, which is let a new guy beat an existing guy decisively, which makes the veteran guy more interesting because he didn't just win, and it gives a rub to the newer guy. So I thought this was a really bold move and a good move for New Japan to do.
Yeah, you're right. Yeah, I mean, Okada came out with the blonde hair, the Rainmaker gear. He was wearing the shorts again. You know, he'd had the split from Jado, who's now with Jay White. And Okada ended up nailing Jado during the match. Or Gado, I probably got the pronunciation of that wrong. I apologise. Felt like Okada's match for most of the duration. He was clearly seen as the star of the match. You know, when he did the Rainmaker pose, there was like huge eruption from the audience, and I mean, the crowd were really into the stars, really into the matches as well. Actually, you've got to say that the crowd certainly did its part on this show. I think you would agree with that, Kenny.
Yeah, 100%.
It's not like going to some WrestleManias where you have the fans just not responding to the matches in the way that you would like them to, so that it would enhance the match. The audience here for New Japan was very different. They were either into a match. In fact, they were into pretty much all the matches. I don't think there was anything that didn't really get a response. And Okada certainly felt like the star of this match, which made it all the more shocking when Jay White scored the pin. I mean, huge upset. As you said, this was Jay White's, you know, this was Jay White's a milestone in his career. Just a huge turning point for him that he would score a clean pinfall over Okada, the longest reigning IWGP heavyweight champion ever. I mean, I kind of felt like it should have been a bit longer, the match, Kenny. And I would have liked to have seen some more near falls. But maybe that's just nitpicking, really. Maybe I'm splitting hairs there. Because this was a good match. And the purpose of it was to put Jay White over and to let people know that Jay White is a huge star that is Okada's equal. So that was the purpose of this match, and he achieved that. So overall, really good match. Really good match. And let's see where Jay White goes from here. Win over Okada, that puts him in line for a future title shot at Tanahashi, I would imagine.
Yeah, you would think so. Top two matches, we get Tetsuya Naito against Chris Jericho for the IWGP Intercontinental Championship. No DQ as set up the day before at the FanFest. And as expected, Naito was able to defeat Chris Jericho to win the title in about 22 and a half minutes. What did you make of the match and the outcome of Naito getting his belt back?
I thought it was a little bit too long. Protracted match, would have liked to have seen a few minutes trimmed from this and tacked onto one of the other matches on the show. But I've got to give Jericho and Naito credit. They really brought it. There was some stuff at the end that was a bit clumsy. Like there was a bizarre, shoved the official and then did like this low blow on Naito and then did a code breaker. It's like a no DQ match. Doesn't matter about that. And then Naito kicked out the code breaker. I think that was the second code breaker that Jericho did. That looked a bit clumsy. There was a few moments in it which was a bit of hesitation. Some of it wasn't that smooth. But overall, I thought it was a good performance from Jericho. I thought he did very well here. Excellent performance from Naito. Springboard dropkick spot that Jericho does, where he does a springboard
How does he do that at 48 years old? How that's the thing with Jericho is like, some of the stuff he was doing in this match, because he's smart enough to not try and compete with some of the other matches on this card, right? Like, he knows to not do that. But he really can still go in a lot of ways. So I've got to give him credit in that sense.
Yeah, certainly. I mean, he did the springboard dropkick where he springboards inside the ring and then dropkicks the guy who stood on the ring apron. And Naito's selling of that was the best I've ever seen. You know, part of the reason why Jericho looks so good, because he was in there with somebody who's, you know, top five in the world. So that's partly why Jericho looks so amazing here. Yeah. But still a tremendous performance from Jericho. Just a really good match. We knew who was going over. It was the right decision. Jericho's had his run there as IC champion. Apparently, he's talking about coming back and doing some more matches. I don't really want to see him in New Japan anymore. But, I mean, if they can strike a deal, maybe it'll be good for New Japan to bring him back for some more matches. That's just my personal opinion.
He spoke to Yahoo Japan and he said, "I just lost the Intercontinental title I took from Naito in June of last year. It's a big mistake if you think that the time with me in New Japan is over. I want to challenge for the IWGP heavyweight belt. Write it down. Chris Jericho will challenge for the IWGP belt. You will understand." I mean, Tanahashi and Jericho, I feel like if he does that match, he's going to it would need to be a different type of match.
It would, yeah. I mean, and I think really it would be one that if New Japan's going to run it, it really needs to be in the States if they're going to get benefit from it.
Yeah.
I mean, Jericho's not coming in to work his way up the ranks, is he? So after losing to Naito, how does he qualify for a match with Tanahashi? New Japan's booking when it comes to these things is usually quite logical. There's a structured way of doing it. I mean, I know there are exceptions, but generally, in order to receive a title match with the top guy, you have got to earn it. And Jericho's not coming in and doing a bunch of matches. He's not going to do the G1 or something like that or New Japan Cup. I just can't see it. So I'm not quite sure how they put that together. If it's on US soil...
And they're doing a lot of US shows. They're doing a show in North Carolina next month. They're doing a fair few shows in the States. So,
but then that would be Jericho going against WWE, wouldn't it?
The fact that he turned up All In really tells you that's changed.
Well, we'll see about that. I mean, that was really just a run-in that was not advertised in advance, so no tickets or buys or anything like that. No business was actually done based on him appearing there, Kenny. That was just a surprise appearance.
True. I mean, that's a fair point, because Jericho, you know, did you see that Instagram photo he had up recently of him and his wife at the NFL game? And Tony Khan had hooked him up with tickets.
No, I didn't.
You know, that picture is designed to work everybody. Designed to get to WWE, to get to AEW, to get to New Japan. So he's at a stage, and I don't blame him, where he's going to take the best offer for him. You know?
Yeah, I mean, I don't blame him for doing that either. I mean, absolutely he should do that. But he made the appearance at All In, as I just said. It was a surprise appearance. No one was spending money on that show thinking he was going to be there. Maybe people suspected he might show up. But that was mostly to promote his cruise which WWE, as far as I know, didn't view as competition. I don't think they're getting into the wrestling cruise business, so at least not yet. So, so as far as him actually working for another company and one that could take money out of WWE's coffers, that's a bigger decision for him to make, because it means that he might then not be able to go back and work for Vince. And obviously he's making money from WWE, from the WWE machine, in terms of merchandise and, you know, all of his matches and other things that are involved on the that part of the network and things like that. Just he makes money from his archive material as part of WWE. So could that be under threat in some way if he works for an opposition company? I don't know. We'll have to wait and see. But yeah, just to get back to what I was saying before, if he's wrestling Tanahashi on a US show, that's fine by me, because New Japan does get something out of that, and it's justifiable, I think, putting Jericho on a New Japan show in the States. But as far as him having a title match in Japan, I think that's a tougher sell.
Yes, well, yeah, it's good because he knows what kind of matches he's capable of having now. And yeah. I think a Tanahashi world title match is going to have a lot of expectations. Yeah. So it'll be interesting. They had the kind of match I thought they were going to have here, and I thought they did a hell of a job. I love the spot where where Jericho did that kind of DDT onto the table thing, or the pile driver on the table on the outside of the commentary desk, and Naito saw that he'd been killed. When Jericho rang the bell as if he'd won, I thought it was a really nice touch. So yeah, I thought it was really good.
All the extras were in there. They had quite a lot of assistance, but they absolutely made the most of it. And we've seen lots of matches of this type in other promotions that have been nowhere near as good as this.
Yeah, and I know that this isn't going to be the same as everybody else, and I think we'll get to your one in a second, but I actually think Naito and Jericho is my favourite match on the show. So for me, Sabre and Ishii had been that before, but Jericho and Naito eclipsed it for me anyway. Okay. But the main event is up next for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. So, and the Jericho-Naito match went 22 and a half minutes. I don't know if I said that. It's Hiroshi Tanahashi and Kenny Omega for the IWGP Heavyweight Championship. They go about 40 minutes or so. I think it's 40 minutes.
Yeah, I think you just done it. It was about 39-something, wasn't
yeah,
it?
Yeah, 39-14 it says here. So they have this, you know, stormer of a match. And in the end, Tanahashi does get the win and becomes the new IWGP Heavyweight Champion. This was the big one. This is the main event. This is what everybody was looking forward to. How did they do, Finn?
I thought they did tremendous. I thought this was the match of the night by a mile. I thought both of these guys just, you know, best in the world. You know, when you see Omega in there, you're just like, is there anyone better than this guy? I mean, I can't think of too many guys that are better than him. I mean, so Tanahashi is somebody who, you know, 5-6 years ago, he's billed as the ace of New Japan, isn't he? And obviously, as IWGP Heavyweight Champion again now, he absolutely deserves that title. But I thought he was tremendous here as well. I thought he absolutely deserved this spot to be opposing Omega in the main event at Wrestle Kingdom. I thought these guys, I didn't think the match dragged at all. I thought they used every minute of the match to build to the next minute of the match. It was like a slow builder, building block match, where towards the end they're doing cross-ups, they're using each other's moves on the other. At one point using moves from other wrestlers. At one point Tanahashi used a Styles Clash, followed by a frog splash, which of course is called the High Fly Flow. And then Tanahashi put Omega on a table outside the ring and did the High Fly Flow off the turnbuckles onto the table. Omega moved. I mean, what a spot that was. I mean, that was incredible. And what I liked about this match, and this is what I like about big New Japan matches, is you have that big show, big match selling, where the guys are selling stuff for a long time and the fans are into it, and it just sets everything else up. And there's none of that sort of cartoon type wrestling, which, you know, sadly we saw a lot of that in the opener with Ospreay and Kota Ibushi, where guys aren't really selling stuff right. And I think, or not selling stuff for as long as they should to really make the moves mean as much as they should. So I felt like in the main event, these guys really, they just went out there. It was a tour de force. They just showed the world, this is how you do a big show main event. That's what this match was to me.
Yeah, I really enjoyed the match. My only minor criticism of it is I felt the finish was a little bit flat. I don't know if that's because, to me, it just felt like, you know, there was all these V-triggers and all these amazing moves, and a frog splash could have been what finished it. Just felt a little bit flat to me.
But well, that's Tanahashi's finisher, isn't it?
Yeah, but so obviously for me, as someone who doesn't watch it all the time, that maybe didn't work as well for me as it does for regular viewers. So maybe that's part of it. That just felt a little bit flat to me. But apart from that, I mean, I can't make any complaints about it. They were great. They had great match. They had a great match. Like you said, it built and built and built. I thought it was a great match. Tanahashi winning was good.
It's that sustained heat that you get, where that really dense sort of heat, and you're just like, wow, everyone in this audience is totally invested in this match. You know,
yeah, I think there's a lot of people, like, I think I've said this before, I prefer matches that don't really go longer than 30 minutes. Okay. Just my preference of kind of match type. But I think what was good about this is the kind of, even if you weren't into it at the beginning, you were into it for at least, you know, the last three quarters of it, which meant that it just kept going and kept going and kept going. So even if they didn't get you straight away, they got you at some point.
That's often the case with these really long matches, because, you know, in the first sort of 6, 7, 8, 9 minutes, they're going slow and everything's deliberate. And you sort of get the sense very early that this match is going long, because they're doing everything more slowly than they would do if this match was going 20 minutes. So it's more sort of building the anticipation. Kind of like watching an epic movie, really, isn't it? Something like that. You know, if you're watching a movie that's like a 2.5, 3-hour movie, some people can't stand movies of that length. I mean, I like them if they're done well. And, you know, that first sort of, the first act or whatever sets up acts 2 and 3. And that, to me, is what this match was. But to me, a wrestling match should be like a film. It should have 3 acts. It should have a start, middle, and an end. It should do. To me, the perfect or an excellent, outstanding, exemplary wrestling match should be like a 3-act structure. It shouldn't just be a sequence of moves that you could take from, you know, one part of the match and just put in another part of the match, and you know, it wouldn't seem out of place. There's one wrestler in particular right now whose name leaps to mind, whose matches are generally like that, where it's just a sequence of moves that don't really lead to anything. You know, you could take something from minute 10 and put it at minute 4, and it wouldn't look out of place because there's no long-term story there.
Yeah, and yes, I mean, I thought this was a really good main event. Overall, I really enjoyed the show. I'm glad I watched it. I'm glad I spent the time watching Wrestle Kingdom. I don't think it's going to convince me to watch weekly or any more often than I probably do. But for what it is, I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a good show. And overall, you enjoyed it as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think we'd recommend that if you can't be bothered watching the whole thing, and we realise that in the modern era, there's so much wrestling to watch that you might not have the time to watch the whole show, I would recommend you watch the main event, the Jericho Naito match, and probably Zack Sabre Jr. versus Tomohiro
Ishii.
Yes. There will be the three that matches that I would recommend.
Yeah, I'm with you. But you know, the other thing is that I think, you know, from what it's funny, because like I was reading a load of responses, and I think that in wrestling there's this thing where like we feel like, you know, if we like something, it has to be the best thing of all time. And like I didn't come away from Wrestle Kingdom 13 going, this was like 2 million miles better than WWE. But what I did, what was funny to me, is the things that I thought they did so much better than WWE are so simple that could be done. Like, you know, we talked about Jay White and Okada. That was so simple as a story, but they told it really well. And I think that what's happening now is that when you watch a show like Wrestle Kingdom, it's just showing you that Wrestle Kingdom and Gedo and New Japan, they've got those basics down. For pretty much all the feuds that they have and all the matches that they have. So, you know, any critiques that you really have of the stuff they do, so like my critique of, you know, I felt the ending to the main event was a little bit flat. But that doesn't really take away from the main event itself. It was still, you know, a pretty much a 40-minute match that was great. So Yeah, I always think it's quite interesting to watch Wrestle Kingdom because I think you see some of the stuff that should just kind of happen across the board, but for whatever reason doesn't, and New Japan tend to do that very well all the time. So I think that's one of the reasons that if somebody who doesn't watch New Japan wonders why people who watch New Japan express how amazing they think it is, I think that's part of it, is they get the structure and the story and they kind of get what they want from it. And I feel like
you
don't get what you want as much.
They do, and what New Japan fans will be absolutely convinced and confident of is that Jay White's win over Okada will take him somewhere. As I said earlier, it's going to entitle him to a title match with either Naito or Tanahashi at some point, because big wins like that take people somewhere. And we've been saying this for so long now that in WWE we just would like wins and losses to matter. So that when and they score a big win, it takes them somewhere.
I'll give you an example. I mean, obviously, we're doing this podcast. I can't show you right now, but somebody's just posted in our Inside the Ropes community. Kyle Burdick, if you get a chance to scroll through, has shared a post about a bunch of fans in a Japanese bar with Okada when he takes off the stuff to reveal his pants.
Yeah.
And the crowd are going mental in the pub at his pants before he's even wrestled. And you go, and that's, but like, this is very easy to do. Just tell long-term stories that people can get invested in.
So, yeah, just real subtle stuff like that. The fact that something subtle like that would provoke that reaction just tells you how well this is arranged and set up by the creative team that's running New Japan.
And that's why, you know, as someone like me who is predominantly a WWE viewer, that's why you should want AEW to do well. You should want New Japan to do well, because that's the only way that, you know, you might see change in the other stuff that you watch.
Which, yes.
Speaking of which, AEW, we're going to find out on January the 8th when All In to Double or Nothing is, and we assume it's in Vegas. Now,
hey, it could be Atlantic City. Maybe it'll be one of Donald Trump's casinos.
Can you imagine?
It may be the Trump Plaza. WrestleMania 4 and 5.
You know, what's funny is, trying to think what I can say. From what I've gathered, AEW wants to be somewhere for everybody, where you're not made to feel like, you know, a political thing is getting in the way of watching your wrestling, you know. You're not going to be made to feel like, oh God, should I watch this show because it's taking place in a country that I shouldn't be watching stuff from. So I don't think they'll have us worried about that. But I do want to ask you about, we know that Cody and the Bucks and Hangman Page and Daniels and Kazarian are all with AEW, but the big wild card is Kenny Omega. There's quite a reputable Twitter account called WrestleVotes, and they tweeted out an hour ago saying, texted a source regarding Omega and WWE's offer to him. They got back and said, if they don't land him, it's not their fault for lack of effort. They've done what they can. Translation, WWE wants Omega. I'm assuming the offer is strong, especially financially. Decision is all his at this point. So there's been figures banded around of like $3.5 million for a multi-year deal. There's people said it's a fantastic offer that WWE have given him. I mean, I guess he is the wild card. What do you think he's going to do, and what would you like to see him do?
Well, I wrote about this in the last issue of WrestleTalk magazine. Did quite a full column on Kenny Omega and what's he going to do. And so I've got to say, you know, I'm quite pleased with that column that I wrote, because what I predicted would happen has happened. Not that you needed, you know, any special powers of clairvoyance to see this coming, because Kenny Omega is the best spout machine, as he calls himself. And I think after his performance at Wrestle Kingdom 13, you know, if you want to have an argument with me about another wrestler being better than him, then bring it on. I mean, I think he proved himself to be, I think he's the best wrestler in the world. I think he is. I mean, when you look at his output and the caliber of his performances, I mean, I can't think of anyone who's as good as him. We know how important he is to New Japan. We know how important he is to All Elite Wrestling if he decides to sign with them. So that's a huge incentive for WWE to make him a big offer, to get him on their team and to prevent him from being part of another. So I'm not surprised at all that WWE has made him a big offer. Absolutely they were going to, for all those reasons, the fact that he's so good and the fact that he's such a crucial piece of talent for anyone else.
But he's a unique case because he's not. He lives in Japan, he likes his life, he's not... It doesn't appear that he is completely guided by money. You know, he's not a guy that goes and does a lot of indie shows. He does select things. I don't know, when was the last time he did a UK indie?
Well, he's done at least one match for Revolution Pro.
Okay.
Was that 2017, maybe? I think it was. He's done at least one match there. I don't know whether he's done more than that, but he's done at least one match for them. But you're right. I mean, he's in a position right now financially where he doesn't have to do independent matches because he's doing very well financially.
But then also he is in his mid-30s, which is typically the time, mid to late 30s, where guys make the jump to WWE.
Absolutely he is. You're quite right. But he's in a position in life now where does he need the money? Well, no, he doesn't. I don't think he's particularly massively motivated by money either. But if a company is offering you 7 figures per year, which I imagine WWE is, and more importantly, I imagine that they're offering him this as well, some type of either creative control. There's got to be something else that they're offering him.
Well, but what also makes it even more fascinating is it's not even that simple now, because Ryan Satin over at Pro Wrestling Sheet, he had also tweeted out last night as well, saying, according to a reliable source, the AEW contract offers are very comparable to what people make in WWE. So are they going to make a big play for Omega? Because would you say Omega is one of the keys to AEW getting off the ground?
Well, we know it's going to happen anyway. We know it's announced now. The cat's out of the bag. We don't have to be coy, to use Cody Rhodes' favourite word in that interview I did with him. We know that's happening. We know there's big money behind it. You know, there's going to be huge opportunities for these guys, for the people who are involved in this company to make money there. So it's not really... I don't know whether it's really about a money thing, but when it comes to actual spending power, you've got to figure that WWE has the ability to outspend on talent. I mean, the Tony Khan, they've got huge money behind them, but they won't have as much money as WWE to spend on talent. I think we can safely say that. I think that's fair to say, you would say. So I would think the WWE can offer Kenny more, but it's like, are they offering him creative control? What else are they offering him? Because someone like Kenny Omega, he could be a flop in that company. It could happen. We've seen that happen to so many people who've gone in there. If they're paying him 7 figures, you would think that they're going to make sure he succeeds, but you just never know with WWE. And sometimes if you're going into that company with a big, big, big reputation, and there's no one in wrestling right now with a bigger reputation than Kenny Omega, that can actually backfire on you. I don't think that attitude is as strong as it used to be in WWE, where people have come in and be like, well, you're not as good as you think you are. You're not as good as your reputation, like what they famously did with CM Punk when he came in 2005, I believe it was. So there were other people back then who had big reputations who came into WWE and were not used to the best of their abilities for whatever WWE's reasons were. I think attitudes now have changed and they are more receptive to pushing talent that were created by other companies. So I don't think I'm as worried as I would have been, say, 10 years ago about Kenny Omega in WWE, but it still could go wrong for him. I mean, look at what's the batting average of NXT talent going from NXT to WWE and succeeding. I mean, there's been a hell of a lot more flops than a lot more misses than hits in that company over the last 2 years when they've made the transition from NXT to WWE. So it's a tough one, really, and I'm not sure which way Kenny Omega's going to go. I think AEW is the safer option, and he's still going to make good money. He can probably still work for New Japan, but maybe his journey there has ended now. What is there for him to do in New Japan now, Kenny? I mean, he's gone as far as he can go. And maybe now is the time to step off. And if he wants to, maybe go back in 2 or 3 years. But how can he top his last, you know, 2016, 2017, 2018, his last 2.5 years? I don't see how he can do it, because that story of him chasing the title was such a, to me, the storyline of the last 18 months, 2 years, really. How's he going to top that? I don't think that's possible.
Maybe. But then also, you know, all of his best friends are in AEW. So is he the sort of performer who would pick his friends over, you know, a new challenge like WWE?
Well, absolutely. Just one more thing about this, Kenny, is of course his friends are there, but he's done numerous storylines with these guys. What is there really left for him to do with the Bucks and Cody Rhodes and Hangman Page and Christopher Daniels and Kazarian? What challenges are left for him with those guys? In WWE, there's a whole bunch of new challenges. There's headlining WrestleMania. And for a guy as driven as Kenny Omega, maybe he's as driven by ambition as he is by money. And maybe the prospect of going to WWE and succeeding there is more appealing to him than the safe option of having a steady job with his pals. Maybe that's something we should consider.
I mean, we essentially could sit and go back and forth on this until he decides what he's going to do, because there's so many variables. But
there is. I mean, I don't know what he's going to do. I mean, it's a big decision for him.
I have this gut thing. I have this gut feeling he's going to sign with WWE. I don't know why. But my only thing is, I really want AEW to get off the ground.
Sure.
And I'm afraid that if he goes to WWE, that would hurt it. But at the same time, I think that maybe that Cody and the Bucks are really the way that this is going to succeed, and I think they can do it without Omega. I mean, it'd be better if they had him, but I don't necessarily think them not having Omega spells the end or anything like that, you know. So I guess we'll see.
Maybe they can pick somebody up from WWE.
There was a thing going around the internet the other day where AJ Styles' contract comes up this year.
Yes.
Because he will now have been there 3 years. So is AJ Styles going to re-sign with WWE, or is he maybe going to take an offer from AEW? Nakamura's contract's up. There's various names they could go for. So
there is. Yeah, and if they're going for a name that they haven't been working with on a regular basis for the last year or 2 or 3 years, maybe that would be better for All Elite Wrestling in the long run, because it would be something different that would be fresh and original. Maybe they've done everything they can do with Kenny Omega.
So we will talk about Mean Gene Okerlund, but we'll maybe do that next week, because we probably don't have time today to give him as much time as I think both of us would want to give Gene Okerlund.
Absolutely.
Next week we'll talk about Gene. But let's quickly, before we leave the main show, talk about the New Year's Eve and New Year's Day's Raw and SmackDown shows. The New Year's Eve Raw, not a lot coming out of it. There was a promo segment with Seth Rollins and Triple H that was pretty interesting, where they seemed to tease that he might be going after Brock Lesnar. What did you make of Raw? Was there anything that stood out for you, or anything that you enjoyed?
Just to talk about that promo. I know I do this sometimes, Kenny, where you'll ask me a question and then I won't answer it. And I apologise. I know I do this all the time.
Don't be silly. It's part of your charm.
Absolutely. The Triple H Seth Rollins segment. We had, I think Brock Lesnar was name referenced, I think, twice in that. Mm-hmm. Also references in there to John Cena. That there seemed like Triple H was trying to set Seth Rollins up as this guy that's going to challenge the Universal Champion at WrestleMania. And seemed to me like they were really trying to downplay the Seth Rollins versus Dean Ambrose feud. I think that's fair to say.
Yeah, yeah.
Triple H was saying, well, I want to see Seth Rollins as this, you know, soulless bastard, you know, this remorseless figure. And it kind of reminded me a little bit of what Vince McMahon had said to AJ Styles on SmackDown the previous week. Did you notice that?
Yeah, it was similar. It was, I mean, because it's funny, because I think a lot of times when people have issues with the McMahons and the authority, it's more because they lord over the performers. But it felt with Vince and AJ, and kind of like with Seth and Triple H here, that the performers are actually getting to talk back, which makes it more compelling, I guess.
Yeah, sure. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, Stephanie really, who's the one who...
Worst culprit of all.
Yeah, he's the tyrant who terrorizes talent, with the exception of Ronda Rousey. So, it did feel like Seth Rollins was the focus of this rather than Triple H, where Triple H was the guy who was trying to make Seth Rollins into a bigger deal than he was. So, I mean, I thought that was pretty good.
I liked when they brought up, you know, that he had actually beaten him at WrestleMania.
That's right, last year. Yeah, there was that. So it definitely felt like it was going somewhere. So that was quite interesting as well. I don't particularly want to see any more matches between Rollins and Ambrose after the TLC match. I've had enough of and various other things that happened in that feud. I've had enough of that now. I would like to just see Rollins move on. I thought it was interesting that they started the show with a match, cage match, with no talking. So that was definitely a diversion from what they normally do. Sorry, a departure from what they normally do on Raw. We generally have the talky-talky segment at the start, but this program, December 31st, Raw started with a cage match. I thought that was a pretty good match. Felt like they drew a line under the Drew McIntyre versus Dolph Ziggler feud, and not before time there either. I don't know whether you...
Let's move on from that, please.
Let's move on from that one. So we had quite a lot of Baron Corbin again. We had the talent giving us their New Year's resolutions, including Lucha House Party. We had the almighty Bobby Lashley versus Seth Rollins, which was a non-finish, wasn't it, with Rollins clobbering Lashley with a chair?
Yep.
What else do we have? Felt the Dean Ambrose versus Apollo Crews match was a huge disappointment, Kenny. Apollo Crews had won a battle royal in order to receive a title match with Ambrose. Was it a title match? It was a title match, wasn't it?
Yeah, because Apollo Crews won the Fresh Start Battle Royal.
Yeah.
And to get a title shot. And it's, I mean, are we ever going to get to a point where we just admit, as great of a wrestler as I'm sure he is, Apollo Crews is so dull that it doesn't matter what you do because he's not compelling. He's too dull.
It's just personality bypass. I mean, it just is. But Dean Ambrose, I thought his heel performance here, Kenny, was woeful. I mean, he should have been the one. It was his job here to give Apollo Crews a hand up, to give him the leg up, to make him a bigger star. I thought Ambrose looked like crap in this match. I really did. I mean, he was out of position on stuff. He should have been really healing it up and trying to get the crowd into it. It was Cruz's match, of course. He was the one who had all the high spots and Ambrose mostly sold. But I thought as a heel performance, very disappointed by Ambrose. Very disappointing indeed. This should have been so much more than it was. And people can point fingers and say, well, Cruz should have done more. But I think if you say it was like, you think of a great heel, like a Shawn Michaels, or even someone like a Chris Jericho, is a guy who I've knocked many times before. But had it been Jericho in this position, he would have got the fans a hell of a lot more into this match than Dean Ambrose did. And as for someone like Shawn Michaels in his prime, you know, forget about it. That would have been, you know, he would have been the guy who would have made Cruz look like a somebody. I just thought Cruz looked like a nobody here.
Yeah, it wasn't very good. I mean, the only thing really in this show that I think was worthwhile was the Seth and Triple H promo, to be honest.
Yeah.
The rest of it was kind of just all stuff that you could miss.
Yeah, I mean, Ronda Rousey in the main event. I mean, you know, I think Ronda Rousey is a great talent. I've said this many times before, and I'm sure will again, but I don't think she should be wrestling as often as she is on this program. And Nia Jax and Tamina Snuka versus Ronda and Natalya in the main event. Rousey made... could you imagine, Kenny, at the start of the year, the very last Raw of the year, Tamina Snuka's going to be in the main event. Didn't see that one coming, did you?
I've dreamt of it, but I never thought I could get it for real. So, but you know, it's funny because you had Raw, which kind of did that, and then I actually thought SmackDown was a fun show the following night, where it actually had some stakes to it. You know, you had the five-way, to determine who's going to face Daniel Bryan at Royal Rumble, with Randy Orton, Jeff Hardy, Rey Mysterio, Mustafa Ali, and who's the fifth one?
The main event was AJ Styles, Rey Mysterio, Randy Orton, Samoa Joe, and Mustafa Ali.
There you go. That was the five. So you had that, and then also I've got to say here, I quite liked the appearance of John Cena on this show. I thought that he, Becky Lynch was kind of just, had one over on him. He treated her like an equal, which he rarely does to people who are when he comes back, and. I quite enjoyed the Becky Lynch John Cena interaction. So before I ask you about that, if 10 was the best that your hair's ever looked, and 1 is the worst, where is John Cena's hair sitting at right now? To you, as an unbiased bystander.
Well, I've got to say, Cena's borrowed some of Tommy Dreamer's spray for the bald patch. I think he put some of that on before he went out there, so the light wasn't like gleaming off his bald patch at the back of his head. So, that's what he was doing. But I'm going to say something now that people might not be prepared for, Kenny. Quite enjoyed this mixed tag team match pitting John Cena and Becky Lynch versus Almas and Zelina Vega.
Wow.
Quite enjoyed the match.
I
think maybe we should just end the podcast now.
it's over. Game over. Skynet have come. Let's leave. But isn't it funny? Because Cena, for the first time in a long, long time, actually came in, and the whole aim of him being there was to get Becky Lynch over. That was
it was. I mean, it was, I could pull a performance apart, but what's the point? As you said, that's what he was there for. He was there to put Becky Lynch over. She shoved him out of the ring at the end. Almas and Vega, I mean, I'm sorry, but they're expendable. WWE isn't going to do anything with them. So this isn't like Cena versus Bray Wyatt or Cena versus Rusev or Cena versus Miz or all those other people. Didn't really matter that they lost. So I didn't have any real objection to the outcome. I mean, Cena wasn't really taking it that seriously, but who can blame him? He's a part-timer now, and maybe that's a good thing because he's moved on. His priority right now is movies, and good for him.
And I like to think that Becky Lynch threw him out of the ring for his awful fucking punch. But that's just me.
I mean, at one point, Cena, I can't help myself. No, I'm not going to say
it. Go for it. Come on. You can't start it and not say it. The people want to hear it. Come on.
Well, there was like an escape from a headlock mm-hmm. near the start, and it was just awful. I mean, there was like, there was a spot in the Survivor Series match from 2017 where I think he escaped from a go-behind that Kurt Angle had applied. And it was one of the worst things I've ever seen in a wrestling ring. So, if you're looking for Zack Sabre Jr. level holds and counters, well, I think we all know by now we're not going to get that from Cena. But overall, I quite enjoyed his performance. So write that one down.
There you go. I'm curious to see, we've got Raw coming up on Monday, and we've got Hogan there for Gene Okerlund. We've got Braun Strowman, Brock Lesnar, John Cena, The Revival getting a tag title shot. So a lot of stuff happening on Raw on Monday, so Raw could be a pretty interesting show when we talk about it next week.
Yes, I'm sure we'll be talking about it in a lot more depth next week.
Yeah, and I also thought, I want to give a quick shout out, I thought the backstage segment with Shane McMahon and The Miz was great. I thought The Miz, showing Shane outfits that he wants him to wear was just comedy gold. I really enjoyed it. And then the main event was good. What do you make of AJ Styles being the one to go on to face Daniel Bryan? He's obviously got this kind of storyline going on with Vince about, getting some fire under him. Did you enjoy it?
The main drawback to it was that it was so obvious that Styles was going to win. I mean, it was impossible for me to imagine that Mysterio would face Bryan at Rumble. Same goes for Orton, same goes for Joe. And even though Mustafa Ali had scored the pin on Bryan in the tag match, I think it was a couple of weeks ago, he was not, he's not a Raw Rumble worthy or level challenger to the WWE title. So that was the thing that kind of let it down for me, was that it was so obvious who was going to win. But I mean, at least Styles had to do something to earn the title match. This is something that we've been banging on about for God knows how long. I think we mentioned it earlier this week. So, I mean, at least this match had a purpose. Styles, this was a match in which the win mattered and the win earned the victor something. So in that regard, no complaints at all.
There you go. Well, that is it for us here in the main podcast. We do just want to say, head over to patreon.com/insidetheropes, where you can get bonus content, bonus articles from Finn, including What's Going Down, also interviews with the likes of Cody, Jim Ross, Edge, Pat Patterson, and many others. You also get this podcast 24 hours early, and you also get the Power Slam Overrun, where this week it is the Alternative Awards, where Finn has come up with... the winners for some alternative awards, like Shocker of the Year, Breakthrough of the Year, Flop of the Year. So we will be covering them over in the Overrun. But Finn, where can people find you and find your lovely ebook? They can't find the hard book version because I, of course, own that, the only one in the world. But, you know, if these ebook plebs want to read it on a Kindle, where could they go to find that?
Or indeed any other device. Just download the Kindle app for free. You don't need to own a Kindle. Just download the Kindle app for free. Read on any device. Well, yeah, people know where they can find the information. FinleyMartin.co.uk. My Twitter is @FinleyMartin. Where can people find you, Kenny?
You can find me on Twitter at KennyMC1985 or @Inside_TheRopes. Tickets are on sale now for Gold Dust, Crossroads and Evening with Dustin Rhodes this coming March in Birmingham, Manchester, Glasgow and London. You can get your tickets at insidetheropes.co.uk/Gold Dust. So, yeah, thanks so much for listening, everybody. Thanks for all your support. We'll talk to you soon. If I be tonight, if I'm sad tonight.